It was a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles and a great eighth day today. You know, every great story has a good beginning and a good end. A good introduction captures our imagination. It makes us want to read, to hear, or to see more. Once upon a time, a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It is these first few words that make us want to continue. But at least as far as I'm concerned, it isn't a great story without a good ending. How many stories have been ruined because of a bad ending? How many times do you sneak a peek at the end of the book to make sure that it ends well? Why waste your time reading something that has a bad ending? In almost everything written, there is a beginning and an ending, an introduction and a conclusion. This is true with books, articles, papers of all kinds, whether an essay for high school or a doctoral thesis. And everything that is written in between gets us from that beginning to that end. So what is the greatest beginning ever written? Well, let's see. Okay, Google, what's the best beginning ever? Well, as you can imagine, it is a matter of opinion. Okay. You know, one of the things that comes up on, well, there are a couple of things that come up on almost all lists of great beginnings. Jane Austen's beginning to Pride and Prejudice, for example. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. And how about this one? Call Me Ishmael, Moby Dick, by Herman Melville. You have to admit, these are pretty good beginnings. But what about endings? It is more difficult to find lists of good endings. So let's forget about all of those and just consider this. As far as I'm concerned, there is no book, no story with a better beginning and ending than the Bible. Genesis 1, verse 1, in the beginning. And you might as well turn there because we're going to spend a bit of time this morning looking at this beginning and consider what it means for us today. Genesis 1, verse 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. This very first sentence captures our imagination. It makes us want to know more. Why? Well, because it hints at the great questions of life. Is there a God? Who is God? What is God? What is his purpose? And what is man? Who is man? And what is his purpose? Verse 2. The earth became without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. Something happened. This was not the way God created it. This second sentence introduces us to something different from God. Something opposed to God. Something that changed what He had created. What caused the darkness? Now remember, we're just starting to read the introduction to the book. It is just starting to lay out what we are going to find as we progress through the story, through the book, and what we should find referenced in the ending of the book. Let's continue. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw the light that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. We are introduced to darkness and light. God calls the light good. And He separates the light from the darkness. And if the light is good, or represents good, we can conclude that the darkness is not good, or represents evil. Verse 5, God called the light day, and the darkness He called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. We have gone from darkness to light, evening to morning. And this is just the first day. God set up a theme here that runs throughout the Bible. A theme that we have heard, I think, every day since we have been here. From beginning to end. Genesis 1, verses 6 through 8. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and morning were the second day. What is most important for us to note here, at least for today, is that this cycle continues. The evening and the morning were the second day, darkness and light. You may also want to note that there is a theme of water here, which we heard a bit about yesterday. And that also continues throughout the entire Bible from the beginning to the end. Verses 9 through 13. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters He called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields fruit, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the third day. There are two things that I'd like to note here. First of all, the theme of darkness and light continues. Also, what we see here are the first fruits of the earth, at least as far as we know the earth, and maybe more importantly, as far as this story that is being told is concerned. Why point this out? Well, because the theme of the third day is the same theme of the third of God's annual feasts, first fruits. Did you ever realize how much detail and knowledge there is in the creation account? I guess this is a good time to take a quick break from Genesis. However, let's look at something else that the Apostle Paul wrote to the Romans near the beginning of his letter to them. Keep your finger in Genesis 1 because we'll be right back there. We're going to continue reading let's look at Romans. How about that? Romans chapter 1, verses 18 to 21. It's really verse 20 that is most important for us today, but I think it's best to put a little more context around it. So Romans 1, verses 18 to 21. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them. For God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Paul explains here that mankind has no excuse. They should understand God, everything about him, including his being the supreme being, the creator God, through the things that he created. Back to Genesis chapter 1. We're going to continue this time with the fourth day, verses 14 through 19. Genesis 1, verse 14. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light to the earth. And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day." There is a lot going on here on this day, starting with darkness and light again. But let's focus on something else for just a moment. I want to read verse 14 one more time. It says, "Then God said, 'Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years.'" Signs and seasons. These are interesting words. Signs, leithoth, a signal, literally or figuratively, as a flag, beacon, monument, evidence, etc. A mark, a miracle, a sign. Seasons, moed or moedim. Properly an appointment, that is a fixed time or season, specifically a festival. By implication, an assembly. Technically, the congregation, by extension, the place of meeting, appointed sign or appointed time. A place of assembly, a solemn assembly, or a set or solemn feast. Appointed or due season. Here's what Adam Clark's commentary has to say regarding this verse, specifically in regard to seasons. It says, for seasons, Moedim, for the determination of the times on which the sacred festivals should be held. In this sense, the word frequently occurs, and it is right that at the very opening of his revelation, God should inform man that there were certain festivals which should be annually celebrated to his glory. Boy, did he get that right or what? So what we really have here is that at the beginning of the universe as we know it, God put everything together to show us when we are to gather together to worship him and to learn about his signals, his signs, his miracles. We're not going to go there right now, but in Leviticus 23, where it talks about God's feasts, the word that is translated as feasts and appointed times is this same word, Moedim. God did not design his feasts around the cycles of the earth. He created all of it, all of our cycles of time to point us to his feasts. Genesis 1, verses 20 through 23, the fifth day. Then God said, let the waters abound and with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens. So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. The only thing I really want to draw your attention to here right now is what is said at the end of verse 21. And God saw that it was good. It's certainly not the first time we've seen that phrase used here. In fact, it is repeated for each day listed here in Genesis chapter 1. So let's move on to the sixth day, verses 24 through 31. Then God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And so now we have all of the animals that inhabit the earth. And God saw that it was good, but he is not finished yet. Verse 26, then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Clearly, man is different from anything else that God created. Not only did God create man in his own image and likeness, he also gave man authority over all of the other things that he had created. The fish in the sea, the birds in the air, and all the animals that inhabit the earth. Verse 27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So here God introduces the concepts of marriage and family. Male and female, he created them. And then he said, be fruitful and multiply. Husband and wife and children. And then verse 31. Then God saw everything that he made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. And so we come to the end of chapter 1. With mankind created, God says not just that it was good. He saw everything that he created, and it was very good. Let's stop here for just a moment and recap some of the important themes that we have been introduced to so far in this book. 1, God is the creator of the heavens and the earth. 2, evil and good, darkness and light. 3, something caused darkness to come to this earth. 4, water. 5, God's appointed times. God determined the cycles of time, signs and seasons, and days and years. 6, God created marriage and the family. What God created, when he created it, it was good. With all of that in mind, let's look at the first or the last part of the introduction. We have one more day to look at, and that is found in the first 3 verses of Genesis chapter 2. Genesis 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work, which God had created and made. This day is different from all of the rest. It takes place after all of the physical creation has been completed. It does not say here that God saw that it was good. Why? Because it wasn't just good. It wasn't just very good. It was perfect. It was just the way God wanted it. Otherwise, it would not have stopped. God ceased work on the seventh day. He rested on it. He blessed it. And he sanctified it. By ending his work, resting, blessing, and sanctifying this day, there are at least 2 things that God created. First is the Sabbath, one of God's feasts, as is also noted in Leviticus 23. The second thing is the 7-day weekly cycle. So I think we'll add one more theme to our list, the 7th day Sabbath rest. See, this is different from what we read earlier when we read about the 4th day. There is nothing that we can see in the heavens that point us to a repeating 7-day cycle. It only exists because God created it that way. The week. 7 days repeating over and over and over. each one beginning in darkness and ending in light, the evening and the morning, reminding us over and over, every day, out of darkness into light. But what does all of this have to do with this day? This holy day that we are celebrating right now. I referred to Leviticus 23 earlier, but I think it's time to go there now and read what it says about this day. I know we read it earlier, but repetition is a good thing. We see it every day. So Leviticus 23, verses 33 through 36. Leviticus 23, verse 33. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of this seventh month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles, for 7 days to the Lord. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. For 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord." We did that. For 1 week, 7 days, we celebrated the Feast of Tabernacles. And as the new week begins, we are to celebrate one more feast. On the 8th day, you shall have a holy convocation, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it. So at sunset yesterday, the Feast of Tabernacles came to a close, and this new feast began, the 7th and last of the annual feasts, kind of like the 7th day. So maybe we can look at this as the Sabbath of the holy days, the Sabbath of all Sabbaths, so to speak. Beginning in the evening with darkness. With that said, let's take a look at all we have so far. We looked at the beginning of the book, a great beginning. And as we looked at that beginning, we found 7 themes, themes that we should also see referenced in the conclusion of the book, at the end of the book. And we have the last feast, the 7th feast. And since we know that the feasts tell us the story of God's plan, we should expect that the last feast, the feast that tells us about the end of the plan, that we should also see this at the end of the book. So let's go to the end of the book and make sure all of this is there and how it all turns out. Turn to Revelation chapter 20. Now, I think you can consider most of the book of Revelation as the conclusion or ending of the Bible. Of course, we don't have time to read all of it today. Fortunately, we've probably read quite a bit of this over the last few weeks as we have celebrated the fall feasts, including, of course, the Feast of Tabernacles this past week. And we have looked at quite a bit of that, this feast as well. So we're going to begin reading just after the time pictured by the Feast of Tabernacles at its completion. So we'll pick up the story in verse 7. Revelation 20, verse 7 says, "Now when the 1,000 years have expired, This is right after the millennium. Just like today is right after the Feast of Tabernacles. So we're talking about things that happen at the beginning of this day. Continues, it says, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, whose number is as the sand of the sea. They went up on the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. So we see rebellion. It's put down with finality, but we see rebellion. Verse 10, the devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet were. And they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. So Satan, the one who brought darkness to this earth, who brought evil into the world, is removed for good this time. Verse 11, then I saw a great white throne, and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them, and they were judged, each one according to his works. And so here we have judgment, which I'm sure we'll hear a bit more about this afternoon. Verse 14, then death and Hades were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. And so we have death. Rebellion, judgment, and death. And while not all of this is bad by any means, this sounds like the dark part of the day to me. So let's look at what comes next. Chapter 21. Revelation 21, verse 1. Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. This is a new creation. It comes down from God complete. One of the things that Jesus told his disciples on that last Passover he spent with them was, I go to prepare a place for you, and in my Father's house there are many mansions. Before we can continue reading here, I have a story that I'd like to tell you. Some of you know that my family, my parents and brothers, along with their families, for the most part, live in California, while Jana, Casey, and I live in Michigan. A few years ago, I had an opportunity to spend some time with my parents at their home. And my dad said something to me that I'd like to share with all of you today. He told me how much he appreciated the opportunity that we are able to share an adult relationship with one another. And it's true. Our relationship has changed. Now, I'm always going to be his son, and he's always going to be my father, but our relationship is more than just a father-son relationship. I remember when I was young that I thought I would never know the things that my father knew, or to be able to do the things that my dad could do. As I grew older, I knew that I could go to him for advice on just about anything, whether it was how to fix the car or house, or about money or jobs, marriage, family, or church. But now things are different. Instead of just being that parent-child relationship, it is so much more. The sharing and the advice don't just go one way. Now we discuss things together. We share ideas and learn from one another. While my dad was still speaking, he's been an elder for nearly 50 years, we shared sermon ideas, things that were going on in the congregations. And today, that is the kind of relationship that I am just beginning to have with my own children. As parents, we want our children to grow and mature physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually until they become responsible, successful adults. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Isn't that every parent's dream? Isn't that God's plan and dream for all of his children? God's plan is about raising his children so that they can become responsible, successful adults in his family, to become like him. We are created in his image and likeness for this very reason. God wants to have a new kind of relationship with all of us. The kind of relationship that I just described. A mature relationship where we can share with one another. See, I think that that's the same relationship that we see described here in Revelation 21. And I think that is part of what this day pictures. The eighth day. The seventh and final feast. Let's continue reading Revelation 21, verse 3. John says, I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. God is moving his home here. He is going to dwell with his people, his family. All of the evil, all of the darkness is gone. No pain, no sorrow, no crying, no death. This sounds like the light part of the day to me. Verse 5, then he who sat on the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said to me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said to me, It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. God has completed his creation. He has finished his work, and now he can rest and spend time with his family. Over the next several verses, John tries to describe this amazing, awesome city, 1,500 miles wide, 1,500 miles long, 1,500 miles high, made of pure gold and adorned with precious stones. Let's pick up the story again, beginning with verse 22. John says, "But I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. The city had no need of the sun or the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God illuminated it. The Lamb is its light, and the nations of those who are saved shall walk in its light, and the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor into it. Its gate shall not be shut by day. There shall be no night there. All who are there have truly come out of the darkness into God's light." Verse 26, "And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it, but there shall by no means enter it anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie, but only those who are written in the Lamb's book of life." Let's finish this up by reading a few verses from Revelation chapter 22. The first five verses, Revelation 22, beginning in verse 1, John continues and he says, "And he showed me a pure river of water of life." We heard a little bit about that yesterday, didn't we? "He showed me a pure river of the water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the middle of its street and on either side of the river was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him. The servants of God shall serve him. They shall see his face, and his name shall be on their foreheads. There shall be no night there. They need no lamp nor light of the sun, for the Lord God gives them light. And they shall reign forever and ever." A good ending? No. A great ending. The best ending ever. Did we see all of the themes from the beginning here in the end? God, the eternal creator God and his firstborn son, check. Darkness and light, check. The one who caused darkness to come to this earth, dealt with, check. Water, not just water, but the water of life, check. God's appointed times. This is the time that everything points to. Check. Marriage and family. He will be their God, and they will be his sons. Check. The Sabbath. Creation is completed, and God is resting with his family. Check. Beginnings and endings. How important are they? Well, a good beginning sets the tone for the whole story, doesn't it? A great story must have a good beginning. and a good ending. This book doesn't have just a good beginning and a good ending. It has a great beginning and the best ending ever. It is truly the greatest story ever told. It is true. It has been given to us by God, the eternal Creator God, who cannot lie. And from beginning to end, and everywhere in between, God is consistent with His messages, including this one, out of darkness into light. God has called us out of darkness into His marvelous light so that we and the rest of mankind can become His children, living and reigning with Him forever. This day shows us all of that. There shall be no night there. They need no lamp nor light of the sun, for the Lord God gives them light, and they shall reign forever and ever.